I talk to people very often who have become quote-unquote successful by cultural standards, as you define it, and some of which that are considered to be, quote, at the top. And yet, rarely do I find them very happy. And often the number one thing they say they're looking for is the very thing you mentioned earlier, which is peace of mind. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give somebody who's, quote, made it to the top and still is missing peace of mind?
To look around for things that they can feel that they're really helping others in some way, and there's always ways. For example, in the history of our civilization, many wars have been fought and millions of lives have been lost because heads of state differed with others, or leaders of some sort, in regard to religion or race.
Yes.
And we know that's true. And I think if those people in those leadership positions really had more consideration for others, those problems would never have been as severe. They'd always be problems. But I think that these prejudices today, and they exist, that you and I, you, others, are all somewhat responsible, unless each and every day we try to do something in our own little way to alleviate unjust prejudices. Now, people say, what can I do as an individual? You can't do much as an individual, but boy, we're not individuals. We are many, but are we much? And we become much when we all contribute in our own little way. So I think people that have seemingly reached the top of their particular profession or perceived to have reached it at least and don't have a peace of mind, it's because that they're always looking on the other side of the street. And I think you should always be trying to do better. And no matter how well you've done, that doesn't mean you still can't do better. And you should always be trying to that. Although I know that there comes a time when we go downhill a little. We don't go uphill like that. We may go downhill pretty fast, but we can slow it down to some extent.
By constant demanding and improving upon ourselves.
That's right.
Right, that makes sense.
Each and every day.
What is a coach?
Well, they've been defined as many things. They've been called many things.
called many things is true.
By different people, but to me, what a coach really should be is a teacher. He's just a teacher, and he's a teacher just as an English teacher is, or a biology teacher is, or a physics teacher is, or a math teacher is. He's just a teacher. He's trying to teach youngsters under his supervision make the most of the abilities that they have in this particular thing, and realizing that the individual abilities that they have are going to be meaningful to others and not just for themselves. And if you become so wrapped up in yourself and lost in your own narrow tunnel vision, lost in your own egos, which we all have to some extent, and I think our strength lies in our ability to keep our egos down.
Yes.
But I think we should all have some. We should all have ego to some extent. It's pride, and we should all have some pride.
But we should earn it.
Yeah, that's right. We should not let it get out of a perspective at all, which the tendency might be at times.
How do you know when you've done a good job as a coach?
Amos Alonzo Stagg was asked by reporters after one outstanding season he had, well, aren't you really proud? Is this probably your best job? And he said, I won't know for 20 years.
Hmm.
So it's what your youngsters do after they've left your supervision that really determines whether or not you have done a good job. On a smaller basis, not as meaningful, when you watch your team play, how they play, do they play the way that you've tried to teach them to play, coming close to that, you can judge, feel whether or not I've done a pretty good job. If you just base it on the score, no. I felt that we have been in games that we outscored our opponent that, in my opinion, we lost. And we've been in games where the opponent outscored us.
Yes.
That I felt we've won. We did. We came close to our ability. I did a pretty good job of helping them reaching their maximum ability that I could expect at this particular time of the season.
Yeah.
So I think that's your job as a teacher. In the mid-30s, I read something that said, No written word, no spoken plea can teach our youth what they should be, nor all the books on all the shelves. It's what the teachers are themselves. And that's what a teacher, a coach should be. I think a coach has a responsibility to be a model, to set an example. And those that don't, I don't, in my opinion, don't think they should be working with our youth.
You know, I think one of the most important things to teach anyone and to be a model of is how to deal with disappointment, because they're inevitable in life. And I think when most people think of you, Coach Wooden, they don't think of disappointment because you had so many victories. But the truth is, you spent almost 16 years before you had your first national championship, and I don't think most people really think about those 16 years. Most people would give up, or some coaching careers are over in 16 years. No one would have known who you were. So how did you make it through those 16 years before you finally had a championship, and what happened to those 16 years? Did you continue to learn and grow? Is that why you created the momentum that created those 10 national championships?
I'd like to feel that I learned every year.
Yes.
I feel that there were some years prior to our winning our first national championship that we would have had a better chance to win had I known what I knew when we did win.
Yes.
And I think there was a time when I wanted to win. I'm kind of ashamed to say it, but it's the truth. And I wanted to win so much that I hurt our chances by perhaps overworking our players.
Yes.
Or by trying to give them too much.
Yes.
And once we did start where we were winning national, now we won a lot of conference championships, and from the winning point of view, I had nothing. People didn't perceive me to be a failure.
Sure.
They didn't perceive me to be a failure, you know, Tony, until we won at one time two championships in a row, and then the next year we didn't win a conference. Then I failed. And then we win seven in a row, and then we lose to North Carolina State in a double overtime in the Final Four, the champion who lost only one game all year, and then I failed. And then we come back and won the championship the next year, so I left as you know, being a winner. But had we lost that last year, I'd go back to a loser again.
I remember reading in your book, you said the more successful you become, the more criticism you hear, the more suspicious people are of you, and the more they expect, you know, from you, and they appreciate you less. So what advice would you give to people that are succeeding, and in terms of how to deal with this, and also how can people deal with disappointment? Because even though you were a winning coach, you still had disappointments. How do you deal with those? I asked you two questions, actually. I dumped two big ones on you there.
Well, that's another thing that I tried to get across to my players, that at times they're going to be receive criticism that won't be fair, won't be just, and you won't like it. And you're going to receive a criticism that really you deserve. You won't like that either. But there are going to be times when you're going to receive a credit and praise that you really don't deserve, but you'll like it. Mm-hmm. And even whether you deserve it or not, you'll like it. But your strength, your absolute strength as an individual, in my opinion, will be on how you are able to cope with both criticism and praise. Mm-hmm. If you let either one get out of hand, it's going to affect you in a very bad way. Don't let the good things go to your head, and don't let the bad things defeat you. There's always another day, and that the next day can be a good day, it can be a bad day, and you're responsible for it.
How did you deal with disappointment yourself? Because I know you had it. What did you do to keep that balanced?
Well, I tried to keep it within myself, and for example, if I'm trying to teach the idea to my players to not let either their emotions show, then I must try to do that myself. And I'm proud of the fact that there have been various times when Nellie, my dear wife, was interviewed. She said, John never brought things home.
Yes.
That he separated his profession from our home. His family came first with him. And I don't know whether that's true or not, and I dare say it isn't true 100%, but at least I was pleased that she felt that way,
yes.
That I tried not to. Well, I don't know. Perhaps my early upbringing, I learned to accept things and didn't get myself too perturbed over the difficult things that would happen, but figured that maybe they're a type of learning and will be helpful to me in the future. I didn't do it 100%, of course, but
sure.
I don't think I let disappointment get me down.
So you try to learn from it, and you seem to have the ability to put it behind you rather quickly. Maybe because your focus was on improvement. I remember in 1960, you had, I guess, one of your worst seasons.
Yes.
It was like 14 and 12, was that?
That's right. That's my worst season.
That pain that you experienced was kind of like the bench for the players, from what I understand for you. It drove you pretty intensely, didn't it?